things because it's so fun and it's so satisfying to be able to go right outside your door and pick your dinner.
This is the Living Homegrown Podcast, episode number 43.
Welcome to the Living Homegrown Podcast, where it's all about how to live farm fresh without the farm. To help guide the way to a more flavorful and sustainable lifestyle is your host, national PBS TV producer and canning expert, Teresa Lowe.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Teresa Lowe, and this is where we talk about living farm fresh without a farm. And that's through canning, preserving, and fermenting, growing your own organic food, no matter how big or how small your space, and just living a more sustainable lifestyle. If you'd like to learn more about any of these topics or my online canning courses, just visit my website, livinghomegrown.com. Today's topic is all about container gardening. Now, if you don't think you have enough space to grow food or you have absolutely no dirt at all anywhere around your home and you want to grow food, you still can by using containers. And even if you do have some garden space, you may still really enjoy this episode because you could still add some edibles to your patio or your porch or your balcony, just about anywhere you want. If you have sunlight, about 6 hours of sunlight, then you could grow edibles in containers. In this episode, we dive into just the basics of what you need to do that. And also, it's especially geared towards a total beginner because growing in a container is a great place to start if you've never grown any sort of edible before. Today's guest is Julie Chai. We've known each other for many years in the garden writing world, and she lives in San Francisco Bay Area, so she is in California like I am. She's a writer and an editor, and she kind of focuses on lifestyle content, but a lot in the gardening realm. She was the senior garden editor for Sunset Magazine, and she covered topics like small space design, edible gardening, and complete makeover. Her writing has been featured all over the place, so you may actually be very familiar with her without even realizing it. She not only wrote for Sunset Magazine, but she also wrote for Gardenista, for Fine Gardening Magazine, Cooking Light Magazine. She's also been on television. She's been on HGTV, NPR. She's been on National Public Radio many times. And of course, her writing and videos are all over the Sunset Gardening Magazine website, which is fantastic if you've never been there before. Now, Julie really loves to work with home gardeners, and she loves to help them create landscapes that they will love. And she has a special focus on edible gardening. So she was perfect to come and talk about small space or container gardening with us today. Everything that we talk about is going to be in the show notes of this episode. So any of the links or any of the videos that we mention, you can go there to get all of that information and find the links. All you have to do is go to livinghomegrown.com/43, and I'm going to have information there for you on growing potatoes in containers, staking tomatoes, and even videos that Julie has made on container gardening. Now, one thing that she talks about in this episode is about building a tomato cage from scratch. And I will have a link in the show notes for that video. When we were talking, she wasn't sure if I'd be able to find the video, but I have it. And a link to that will be in the show notes. So you can just go to livinghomegrown.com/43, and everything that we talk about will be right there. So without further ado, here is my interview with Julie Chai, former senior garden editor at Sunset Magazine. Hey there, Julie. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Well, before we dive into container gardening, I really would like to ask you a few questions about your life working as an editor for a major magazine, if that's okay.
Of course.
Okay. Well, first of all, I know you worked there for over 10 years, and up until very recently, you were a senior editor for the gardening section.
Yes.
But now you're nurturing something very different. at home.
Yes, I have an almost 2-year-old.
So. Yeah, that's a whole different kind of growing.
It is, absolutely.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
But I would love to know if you could tell us a little bit about the way the magazine would mesh together gardening and food, because Sunset is so well known for that, and the recipes are so fantastic, and the gardening information is so fantastic. And I was lucky enough to get to visit Sunset headquarters in Menlo Park, California. I was really amazed at how you guys meshed everything together. But headquarters is recently moved, hasn't it? It's moving to Oakland.
The headquarters is now in Oakland in Jack London Square. And the garden is actually separate. The garden is now going to be at Cornerstone, and they're in the process of designing and installing that.
Ah, okay. So
as we speak.
Yes. So when I was visiting, it was all in one location, which was pretty cool.
Yes.
So
yeah, that definitely made it convenient.
Right. Well, so tell me, how was it exactly that the test garden worked? Like, how far in advance did you have to be planting something for a story?
So we often planned things more than a year in advance, because a big part of what we did, you know, was trying to capture things in season and photograph them at the right time of year. So if we had a story that ran in June, very likely it was shot the previous June or the previous summer, so that it was really authentic to that time of year. And so planning, you know, stories could sometimes happen, you know, a year and a half, 15 months, or a year in advance, so that we could plant things at the right time and make sure they looked good at the right time.
So that must have been a lot of pressure.
It wasn't a lot of pressure necessarily. We had, you know, things that we knew we always wanted to do. We always wanted to have some sort of edibles, especially in the big growing seasons. So we had those in the back of our mind constantly. And we kind of, you know, we had this rhythm of making sure we had the timing right.
Ah, okay. So, and you would actually trial crops, correct?
Yes, we did. So the test garden was actually a test garden. We did test things there. And so, you know, periodically we would trial things, and, you know, they may or may not make it into the magazine. There were lots of things that didn't work out, you know, just as in your real home garden, there were lots of things that didn't work and didn't ever show up in the magazine. But things that did and that ended up looking good were what we tried to show off.
And when I was there, you guys even had chickens.
We did, yes. We had a big project ongoing for several years called the One Block Diet, or the One Block Feast, I think. And there's a cookbook around that as well. But chickens were part of that, and we raised them for eggs.
And did they use the eggs in the test kitchen?
Yes, they did.
Fantastic. Well, yeah. It was really fascinating to walk through and see, because you guys had a lot packed into a very small space. Each little section was growing something completely different. And
yes.
I think people don't realize that when you would photograph something, you were only photographing like maybe a 5-foot area, and something completely different was growing right next to that area that you were photographing.
So that's exactly right. We had 4 quadrants in the test garden. And even within those quadrants, we would sometimes split them up into 2, 3, or 4 projects.
Yeah, it was really amazing. And so it, you know, does kind of fit with what we're talking about here about packing a lot into a small space. But you guys were masters at it, and it was, everything just looked so amazing. So how would it work that you guys would be able to work with the test kitchen?
So that actually took a lot more coordination than just planting things in the test garden for garden stories. We actually had a column for a while. I and a colleague of mine in the food department had a column called Garden to Table, where we would talk about crops that you could grow in your garden and then create recipes to go along with those. And the timing was always a little bit funny in the magazine, because we weren't sure, you know, what would be best for readers, whether we should show the story during planting time or during the time when the crop actually was coming to harvest. And so we ended up showing, you know, the plants primarily when it was time to plant them. But yeah, the timing of that for the magazine was always a challenge, but we ended up with some really good crops to show off.
Well, I have to say that everything I've ever made out of the magazine always worked. So I'm assuming that they tested everything so thoroughly.
Over and over and over. That's one of the things that's really great about Sunset Recipes, is they are tested multiple times by many people. Our test kitchen actually had 4 different stations, and they were tested on gas stoves, electric stoves, like all these different sorts of scenarios that you might actually have in your home kitchen. And they kind of combined, you know, all of the differences to make sure they worked.
Ah, well, it worked because they do work. Yeah. I've never had a failure, and I've had failures in other magazines, but never a sunset. Never,
right, you
ever.
Can trust sunset recipes.
Yep, absolutely. Well, that so you got to taste everything too.
Yes, that was one of the best parts. Best parts of the test kitchen was they would any, you know, whatever they made, they would put any extra, you know, on a counter that employees could go sample.
Well, of all the things that you guys grew in your test garden, what was your most favorite project or favorite thing that you ever did?
Oh, it's so hard to say. There were so many that were so much fun. It really is hard to pick one, but I always loved the ones that you know, were what we would call pretty and productive. So edible gardens that were also really beautiful were really fun because, you know, what a lot of us who have small spaces find to be a challenge is creating, you know, areas for edibles and, you know, maybe cut flowers that are going to look good in our garden without having that real farmy kind of look.
Exactly. Yes. And you guys really pulled it all together.
Yeah, we worked really hard at it and tried to do that.
Yeah. Well, it was definitely a success. And you guys did great teamwork because I can only imagine the logistics of trying to get something to be just right so they can cook it and get it ready for the magazine at the same time. So good job to you guys.
Thank you.
Well, okay. So let's move on to our topic of container gardening. And I'm so glad that you could come on and talk about this because I know you covered it a lot with the magazine and all of your other writing that you do. And I think people really want that fresh from the garden food, but sometimes they feel limited or stifled because they don't have a lot of space. And containers are just such a great option.
Absolutely. If you have a sunny spot where you can fit a container, you can grow food.
Yeah. And it's not a lot of time or money invested in that one little spot. You don't have to worry if it fails, you haven't, you know, done acreage.
Right. It's not a huge investment. I mean, the thing is, if you're starting from seed or from little transplants, little seedlings, those only cost a few dollars, which is really the same price as a head of lettuce, you know, these days, or, you know, a pound of fresh tomatoes. So even if that crop fails, which it probably won't unless you totally neglect it, you're going to get your money's worth.
Yeah. And I'm glad you said that sometimes you guys had failures because I think a lot of people just starting out think if they fail that they've failed as a gardener, but all gardeners kill things. I kill things all the time.
I still do.
I do too. Yep. And it also comes from experimenting, you know, trying a new area or a new plant or forgetting, you know, we get busy, especially now that you have kids, you know.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Okay. So don't worry about if you make mistakes when you try, and gardening in a container is a great way to start because if you make a mistake, you don't have to feel so bad.
Yeah. And I would even go as far as to say, expect to make mistakes, expect to have some failures because, you know, it's all a learning process. And with anything in life, the more you do it, the better you'll get. And with gardening, you know, sometimes a crop only grows for a certain time of year, you know, so you won't necessarily get a chance for a do-over until the following year. And I think that's sometimes why it can seem a little bit intimidating. But edible gardening is actually quite easy if you just follow some basic things.
Yes, absolutely. So let's start off by talking about some of the things that we can grow in containers. What would you suggest people start with?
Well, you know, I would say that you can grow almost anything in containers if you have a big enough container for some crops. Mm-hmm. But I would say start with what you like to eat. Think about what you buy at the grocery store and what you really enjoy cooking with and eating, and start with those crops. It is important to pay attention to the time of year. So there are what's called cool season crops and warm season crops. And then there are also some perennial crops. But I think what people most often think of when they're getting started are things like tomatoes and peppers and lettuces, and all of the leafy greens like kale and chard. And all of the leafy greens are primarily cool season crops. So you grow them in the cooler time of year. In California, and especially in Southern California, some people can grow those for a good part of the year, especially along the coast. But summertime is when we really grow things like peppers and tomatoes and eggplants and squash and cucumbers. But all of those things can be grown in containers.
Yes. And the thing to keep in mind, too, one thing that a lot of people don't think about is that if you're growing something and you suddenly realize that maybe it needed more sun or it's not quite in the right place, because it's in a container, you can usually, unless it's a huge container, you can usually move it a little
bit. Totally.
Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, and even if it isn't a huge container, you can get a dolly and a friend and, you know, get it into a different spot.
Yeah. So that's good to keep in mind. Okay. So when we're talking about edibles, pretty much anything goes.
Almost anything goes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And even trees, even small trees. I grow all of my citrus in containers. It does take a little bit more care to grow a small tree because you have to feed it a little more. And I do periodically have to do root trimming to keep it in the container. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you can get away with just about anything. Is there anything absolutely. You don't recommend that people grow in a container?
You know, I don't want to say there's something that you cannot grow, but trees that grow really big, like, you don't want to put a full-size fruit tree in a container.
No.
You know,
you
so,
want to
so
do
when
dwarf.
We talk about, yeah. When we talk about, you know, even citrus or other fruit trees in containers, stick with dwarf varieties and they'll be labeled like that. And if you're not sure, talk to your nursery. But other, you know, things that grow really big, plants that are really giant, you know, I would probably not grow in a container, especially if you're a beginner, because it's just going to be more work. And right. The thing is, too, about some of those bigger edibles like trees is that they take a while to produce anything. So some trees like, you know, peaches, apples, like all of those types of trees, they can take several years before you start getting a really good crop. And I always say for beginners, like, plant something that's a sure thing. You know, especially when you're just starting out, because you want the satisfaction of harvesting something to kind of motivate you to keep doing it, because it is effort. You know, it is a little bit of work, but it's so much fun and it's so satisfying. And so I would suggest starting with annual crops. So either warm season or cool season crops, depending on the time of year, because you'll have something to eat in a couple months.
Yes. And that'll keep you motivated to, like, if you started now in February, you could harvest that. And then when we get into the cooler season, start going into fall, you can do a whole different type of plant.
Yeah. Like, I just planted kale. I'm going to plant some radishes. I've got beets going to go in, and those will be ready in a couple months.
Yeah.
You know, if you plant salad greens, even from seed, if you just scatter some salad greens on an empty patch of soil or in a container, you'll have greens really quickly.
Now, do you recommend people start with seeds or do you recommend small plants?
It depends on what you're growing. I mean, getting back to the idea of giving yourself the best chance for success as you're getting started, you know, seedlings are really easy. They're already started. So I would probably suggest starting from seedling. And nurseries these days are packed with such a great variety of choices. If you want something really exotic that you can't find pre-grown as a seedlings, you can start from seed. But you have that extra time it's going to take to start those seeds and grow them into seedlings that are ready to be planted outside. And, seed starting is also quite easy, but there are a lot more variables that you need to pay attention to. So for greatest ease, I'd probably start with seedlings.
I agree. I think also you can do a little mix up. You know, like, you could start with seedlings, small plants, and then as you're kind of get your feet wet, you could have another pot or another container that you have seeds, or you may even, as you harvest one thing, be able to add seeds to, you know, kind of keep things moving along.
Sure.
But speaking of that, also, I know you've talked about this in articles before about mixing edibles in one container. You don't have to just do all one thing.
It's true. That's true. Especially, you know, I gardened for years on my front porch in only containers, and I would grow all sorts of edibles, you know, and I wanted them to look pretty. So I like doing mixed containers. You just want to make sure that there's enough space for everything. So what I would say, you know, I really recommend going with bigger containers. And by that, I mean 16 inches wide and as deep. So 16 inches diameter and as deep, at least. You can grow things in a smaller space than that. I know people do. But the more soil you have, the more space roots have to spread out and the bigger your plants will get. You know, I think the more room you have for them to grow, the greater chance you'll have of getting a good crop.
Yeah, that's a really good point, especially since we're going to be harvesting these to eat. You want to have the biggest that you can get.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
That's good. All right. Well, so what are some types of containers that people should be looking for?
I like to use glazed clay containers, or, you know, there are lots of, they're not quite plastic, but they're a synthetic material. They're non-porous. And I like to use those over something like unglazed terracotta because they retain moisture a little bit better. So the unglazed terracotta is a little bit porous, and you know, depending on where you are, especially if you're in a really hot area or if it's summertime, they'll lose moisture more quickly than a container that's glazed or that's non-porous. And it's also really, really important to make sure your containers have drainage holes, because yes, you don't want excess water pooling up in the bottom of your pots, because that can start to create root rot.
Yeah, you basically
can't recover from.
Right, you kind of drowned the plant if it doesn't drain out. You know, that's a really good point about the terracotta or the unglazed pots, because I'm here in Los Angeles area and I love those pots, but holy cow, do they dry out? So yes, I have also made the switch to a lot of glazed pots and they because we're on a, you know, water shortage, I end up not watering as much. And the other ones, the unglazed, just dry out within 24 hours.
Yes, there really is a big difference. And, you know, if you're in love with terracotta and that's the look you like, you can get a sealer. There are terracotta sealers you can buy. I've gotten, I think, just at the craft store that I've used to seal the inside and the outside of the pots. It does create a little bit of a kind of a shiny look. So it doesn't have that nice, soft terracotta look.
Yes.
But it will help with moisture retention.
Yeah, it's a little, puts a little bit of like a glaze on the outside.
Sheen.
But just a slight sheen. But it's really, I still like the way it looks. It makes it look very new.
Yeah. I mean, if you have some really expensive terracotta pots, I would test it on an area, you know, an inconspicuous area on the pot to make sure you're okay with the way it looks.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so we kind of know what types of containers, and we want to go for 16-inch wide and 16-inch deep as much as possible.
Yeah, roughly about that, yeah.
Right, and I think it's important also that people kind of look at what they're going to be growing there, the root system for the different plants. Like, for instance, growing carrots in containers is very possible, but if you're growing carrots, you definitely have to have the depth.
Yes, yeah, right. So you know, when you're planting something like carrots or some other root crop, check either if you're starting from seedlings, check the tag or check your seed tag and see how long those are going to grow and make sure your container is longer than that.
Exactly.
You know,
or
a few
you can
inches longer.
Right. Yeah. Or you could always grow some of the shorter carrots if you wanted to. And I grow in my backyard, and especially when my kids were little, I grew potatoes in containers. Potatoes in containers are really fun because the kids love to dig them out because it's like buried treasure. Mm-hmm. But also I had a lot less pest problems in containers. Yeah. The trick, if you ever want to grow potatoes, is to use late season potatoes. They tend to do better in a container. Okay. And you harvest them as soon as the plant finishes flowering. And the little tiny potatoes, you get a lot of little ones as well as big ones. And the little ones are really tender and tasty. So you don't throw those away. You eat those too. Yeah, they're really good. But yes, root vegetables can still be grown in containers. So if you really have your heart set on carrots, then they should still go for that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so what about hanging baskets? You and I had talked about this once before. I have the same problem with hanging baskets as I do with terracotta.
Yeah, a lot of hanging baskets are lined with that coconut fiber material or some sort of fibrous material that's super, super porous. And, you know, most hanging baskets are also small because they need to be light enough weight to hang. So I probably wouldn't grow in hanging baskets. I mean, there are some nowadays, there are hanging baskets that are ceramic glazed containers. So you could try, but they're typically shallow and smaller than I would personally use. If you have your heart set on some that you totally love, I say go for it and give it a try and see what happens. But in something really shallow, the only thing I have ever had success growing were lettuces.
Yes. And being up off the ground, you have, I'm sure, a lot less slugs and snails.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, the most shallow container I've ever grown in was probably like, I'm trying to guess, maybe 6 inches by 12 inches. And that was for lettuces. And again, if you really like the look of that, you know, the fiber-lined wire basket, hanging baskets, you can line the inside with some plastic. And just, yes, you know, some thick plastic, just make sure you poke holes for drainage again. But you can give that a try and see how it does.
Yeah. And the plastic would keep the wind from blowing all the way through. So yeah, plastic would definitely help.
But, yeah, and you could definitely do some little herbs, like you could do little thyme or some, you know, some smaller herbs. And once they, you know, they will eventually outgrow the pot. So then you can just stick them in a larger pot and, you know, start something else if you really want to grow in hanging baskets.
Right. And if there's something that's an annual, then when they're done and you could take it down and do something different. All right. Well, so now what about soil? Because I know that soil is very, very important in containers. So what do you usually recommend for people doing containers?
I look for something that's organic and that has, you know, lots of amendments. And typically you get what you pay for when it comes to garden potting soil. So don't get the cheapest ones that the store sells. Unless it's a nursery you know and you've talked to them and you understand what they've put into it. You know, every nursery I know has some pretty good organic potting mixes that are really rich and they have lots of nutrients for edibles. The thing about growing edibles in containers is that you're going to need to feed, meaning fertilize, them more often than you might for some plants in the ground because you're limited, you know, they're limited to the nutrients that are in that soil. And when you water, you typically water enough so that some, you know, drains out the bottom. And as it drains out the bottom, you're also draining away some nutrients. So you just need to make sure to replenish those. You can use a diluted fish emulsion or a diluted liquid organic fertilizer. That's what I like to use. You don't want to overdo it, but you just want to, you know, make sure they're getting enough nutrients. I know Dr. Earth makes one that I've liked.
Yeah.
But there are lots of brands. You know, okay. I'm not partial to one.
Right. And do you dilute that? I dilute mine a little bit.
I do. Yeah. I do. I make it maybe half strength or even quarter strength of the recommendation.
Sounds good. And then the other thing is not to use soil from your garden.
That's right. Yeah. When you use, depending on where you live, you might have very loose soil or very heavy soil. Where I live, we have very heavy clay soil. And you don't want to dig up your garden soil and mix it into your pots because you might introduce some diseases and weeds or bugs that you don't want in your containers. And the soil may not be the right type for pots. Like for me, we, you know, heavy clay soil is really bad for pots. But when you buy purchased potting mix, it's really light and loose, and it's made especially for good drainage.
Right. And just so everyone understands, we're saying not to use garden soil. You may be thinking, yeah, but the garden soil is fine when I plant my plant in the garden. Well, if there's bugs or disease or anything else, it's going to move through. But when it's in a container, those bugs that you had in there, they're not going anywhere. All they have to munch on are your plants that are in that container. So they're kind of like caged in. You've kind of caged everything in and there's no way for it to escape.
I never thought about it like that, but yeah.
Yeah. So, because I've had someone say that to me, like, why is it okay to plant something in the garden and then it's not okay to use that same soil in a pot? And it's really because you're completely caging that in right there. And if there is a problem, you can't fix it as easily. So, okay. And then, so we've got feeding and soil and the containers. What about watering?
Watering is one of the most challenging issues for gardeners in general, especially when you're just getting started, because it's hard, you know, you want an easy solution like water three times a week, but that's not really accurate because it depends on what the weather is like where you live. It depends on the time of year. So for containers, the recommendation that I always give is to water when the top 20% of soil is dry. And that involves sticking your finger in the soil and getting to know how frequently your soil dries out. And, you know, that'll only take a few times of trying that. You know, edibles need nice, moist soil. So you don't want the pot to go completely dry. But when the first, like, you know, inch or couple inches of soil starts feeling dry, go ahead and water. And the moisture level you're looking for is for the soil to feel as wet as a wrung out sponge. So just kind of damp and lightly moist. You don't want it soggy or, you know, very heavy, but you just want to have that kind of nice, light, moist feeling.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to describe it as a wet sponge. And the more people do it, you kind of get a feel for it. I can tell certain plants as soon as I walk by, I'm like, oh, I can tell, you know, from 6 feet away, it's just starting to get a little.
Yeah. Your plants will tell you for sure if you're neglecting them. And the thing is too, you don't want to let your soil dry out, because if your soil totally dries out, it's really hard to rehydrate.
Good point. Yes.
So, you know, I've heard some different solutions that, you know, some people will just put the entire pot in like a pan of water and let it wick up the moisture for a couple hours. You know, I find it really hard when a container is dried out. I find it really hard to rehydrate that soil. So it's better to keep an eye on it and not let that happen in the first place.
All right. So now what about sunshine? We kind of hit on that a little bit at the beginning. How many hours do you recommend for a container for edibles in general?
For most edibles, at least six.
At least 6 hours of sunlight.
At least 6 hours of sunlight. And, you know, you can play around with a little bit. So things that produce fruit, like tomatoes and peppers, especially, those love the heat. But anything that produces a fruit, you really want that full sun, that 6 or more hours of sun a day. Things like greens and herbs, you can get by on less.
Okay.
So if you don't, you know, very few of us have the ideal perfect sun exposure that's going to give us, you know, 6 to 8 hours of perfect bright sun a day. So you're going to have to experiment a little bit if you don't have a really bright spot. And oftentimes, you know, even the fruiting things will produce for you. They just might not produce as much as you would get if you had more sun.
Okay. And you can always move things around if you need to, if you have another sunny spot and you're able to move to a different spot, that always works. Okay. Fantastic.
Yeah, but I would choose the sunniest spot that you have.
Yes. And you can also grow things that trail, you know, like let's say you wanted to grow cucumbers. If you have a wall, you can still put something in a container and grow it up onto the wall. There's lots of things you could lay up against the wall a piece of fence, it can grow and attach. So you don't have to just grow something that's like a bush shape or, you know, a root vegetable. You can grow trailing things, or you can just let them come out over the sides and trail.
Right. That's totally true. Yeah. You can put some sort of support like a trellis or, you know, other structure for those plants to climb on. But like you said, you can just let them spill out.
I remember you did a video on growing tomatoes and you were talking about staking it. That's something we should probably have you talk about too.
Yes. I also wanted to say one other thing about crops like tomatoes that are big. I would go with an even bigger container if you can. You know, even bigger, like as big as you have room for is better for tomatoes.
So even bigger than the 16 inch.
Yeah, I would, if you can, you know, if you have space for that. A lot, you know, I know that then you start getting into these big, really giant, big and heavy containers. But, you know, if you can get 18 inches or even 20, you'll just get more fruit. When you're staking tomatoes, you want to make sure to put your stake in at planting time. So when you put your little seedling in the soil, get your stake in right next to it as soon as you plant, because once that plant starts growing, you don't want to disturb the roots by putting a stake in afterwards.
Right.
You don't want to damage some of those roots. So you want to get that stake in right before the roots start spreading out. And as the plant grows, you can tie it, you know, every foot or so, you know, just loosely to the stake to help train that central leader in an upright way that makes it a little bit easier to manage.
And the thing to remember also is that you can kind of research your tomatoes a little bit and maybe go for something that is a more compact tomato. There are definitely some varieties, but if you're going to go for the really big, the really big jumbo size tomatoes, they generally grow pretty tall. So you'd need a pretty substantial stake.
Yeah, I use rebar. I like to use just a piece of rebar. And for a container, you want it in pretty deeply. So an 8-foot piece of rebar in maybe a container that's 2 feet high would be enough.
Yes.
Because tomato plants can easily get 4, 5, 6 feet tall.
Yes. And rebar you can get in the home improvement store, and it's over where they have lumber and fencing.
Yes.
So you can always just go in and ask, but it's not expensive. And actually, once it gets a little bit rusty, it kind of just blends right in. I think it looks kind of cool.
I do too. It's I think it's much more attractive than the super like bright green painted tomato trellises, you know, tomato cages. And a note about tomato cages, most that have existed over the years are totally not big enough or sturdy enough to handle.
Oh, I know. They're terrible.
You know, they're getting better. They're getting better. They're making some, you know, bigger, more sturdy tomato cages, but rebar is so inexpensive and so versatile, and you can use it for so many things. I think it's much easier to get a piece of rebar and some string, and you just make your own and tie it up that way.
Yeah, that's a really good tip. And the other thing is, you when you do place your rebar, I would wear gloves because they can have little sharp edges. So,
oh, that's a good tip. I haven't experienced that before.
Yeah, so well, I've gotten a little nick or two myself.
And they're rusty. So
yeah, they're rusty. Yeah. Gardeners always have their tetanus shot. Yes, because we always have something rusty out there. But yeah, so it's a really inexpensive way to give yourself something really sturdy. I had never thought to use it in a container, but I do use rebar in my regular garden. So yeah. I've loved it.
You can also use a wooden stake, you know, a thick wooden stake, one that's maybe at least an inch, you know, an inch square, not a teeny tiny skinny one. Because tomato plants really, you know, they get 4, 5, 6 feet tall. They're very heavy. They're very branchy. They can easily pull a skinny stake right out of the ground.
Yes, absolutely.
So you want something sturdy and in deep and secure.
Yeah, and I agree with you about the tomato cages. Most of them are just terrible.
Yeah. I mean, I've made my own. So I think we probably have a video on Sunset on how to do your own tomato cages. It's super, super easy. You just get some landscape wire with holes. It's sort of like chicken wire, but there are big square holes that are like 4 inch by 4 inch that you can stick your hand through.
Sometimes they're also in the concrete section at the home improvement store.
Yeah. It's just a big roll of wire. It looks like, you know, big roll of chicken wire, but it's got different size holes. So that also is something I like to use for a tomato cage.
And you can make it round. So you cut it and you just wrap it around. And then do you use rebar to hold that in also?
Yeah. So I think there is a video on Sunset of this, but what I would do is roll out enough so that you can get a cage, maybe, let's see, I'm trying to measure with my arms here, maybe 18 inches across. I can't quite remember exactly how long we would do, but about 18 inches, you know, in diameter. Mm-hmm. And then we would sort of weave two pieces of rebar, you know, on opposite sides of the cage. So you take the piece of landscape wire, roll it out. It can be pretty springy. So I would step on it to kind of flatten it just a little bit, cut my piece, you know, fashion it into a circle. And you can even just wrap those loose ends of its own self around other pieces.
So yeah, make little hooks. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would definitely wear gloves, like you said, because those ends are super sharp. And then just kind of weave the rebar through some of those holes and kind of secure the rebar into the soil with the cage.
Yeah, that's really, those are so much more sturdy. They're stronger and
they're great and reusable. They last forever. You can just, you know, roll them back up and put them in an out of the way place.
And they're very inconspicuous. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like the look.
Yeah, me too.
Well, Julie, I think we hit on everything. Was there anything else I missed?
You know, I think the like last piece of advice I would give would just be to go for it. Start growing things because it's so fun and it's so satisfying to be able to go right outside your door and pick your dinner.
I think it is too. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
And
thanks for giving us a little behind the scenes look of Sunset.
Absolutely.
And that was my interview with Julie Chai. I hope you got a lot out of that, and I hope you'll try and dive right in. Everything that we talked about, including that tomato cage video that she wasn't sure I would be able to find, I found it, and I have it in the show notes. And everything else we talked about, from the potatoes to staking tomatoes to even some videos Julie made on container gardening, I will have it all in the show notes. Just go to livinghomegrown.com/43. So that's it for this week. Until next time, just keep working towards living a little more local, seasonal, and homegrown. Take care.
That's all for this episode of the Living Homegrown Podcast.
Visit livinghomegrown.com to download Teresa's free canning resource guide and find more tips on how to live farm fresh without the farm. Be sure to join Teresa Lowe next time on the Living Homegrown podcast.